Music in Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles.
And under the boughs unbowed, I'll clothe in a snowy shroud. She had no heart so hardened, all under the boughs unbowed. Well,
I finally made my way up to Portland here on the podcast, and we're going to stop into the local favorite, and it's garnished some national attention now too, bar and restaurant Hey Love out in Portland at the Jupiter Hotel. And I'm going to talk with Aaron Hall, one of the owners of the place, who is going to tell us about his journey from college radio and his ambitions to get into the music industry and how it took him straight to hospitality. Well, he did open a music venue, kind of, sort of, on the way there. So sit back, sip a coffee, Portland style, or if you want to be like Aaron, tequila and soda, and listen to Aaron tell us his stories.
Yeah, when did you open?
Yeah, we opened in August of 2018.
We were right behind you in October. Actually, today is officially our 4-year anniversary.
Oh, no way. October 11th, 2018 was the... That's so cool. Well, congratulations. Yeah, you guys have done pretty well for yourselves in those short 4 years. You've made it through the COVID.
We did. That's probably, you know, one of our biggest accomplishments, you know, and it is kind of weird to signify a birthday because we were closed, obviously, for 14 or so months.
We missed our anniversary too. Well, why don't you introduce yourself? And, you know, I know what bar you're at, but tell the listeners when they start listening.
My name is Aaron Hall, and I'm one of the owners of Hey Love, and we're a bar and restaurant in Portland, Oregon. We live in the Jupiter Next Hotel on Burnside Street, right in the middle of town. And yeah, as I said, we've been open since 2018 with just a little blip in the middle. Mm-hmm. And it's been a good run so far.
So is this your first time in a kind of ownership position at something like this?
No, I owned another bar called Digapony that opened in 2011. Mm-hmm. And we actually just sold it to some friends a few months ago, and they're turning it into a bar, into a venue space.
Actually. Oh, really?
But there will also be a bar restaurant, but they're going to throw a lot more shows than we did.
Okay. But you still are involved in music with Hey Love as well.
Correct. Yeah. So we do DJs every Friday and Saturday night, and then Sunday for brunch. And then we host shows kind of whenever it feels good. So we've got, as opposed to kind of, you know, chasing the calendar, we decided that we just want to do it when it makes sense. So we do a monthly jazz night called New Bop, which is really special. Mm-hmm. Some really sort of progressive jazz. So that happens virtually every month. And then beyond that, kind of maybe three or four other shows a year. You know, where we actually pop up all the way and clear out all the furniture and turn it into.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is the space like? I've never been there. So if you just do shows when you feel like it, or, you know, whenever it's the timing is right, what is that space like? Because it's a bar and restaurant. So
yeah, 100%. So the space is relatively small. I think the actual square footage of the restaurant space, excluding the kitchen, is like 1,600-1,700 square feet. Mm-hmm. And so it's an intimate space. We also are known for being super lush. There's hundreds of plants in the space. And so that brings the ceiling down. So it's a very like cozy nooked in room. And so when we do pop up a show, we'll clear out some of the furniture, you know, one of our seating zones, and just throw a band and a PA in over there. And it's really intimate. It's a nice space to do that. Because it feels like, you know, there's no stage set up. So everybody's just playing from the floor. Mm-hmm. We virtually never charge a cover. And so, yeah, it's a pretty intimate.
That seems very Portland though. Portland's such a music town, but it also has those. I mean, Portland to me always feels, I mean, again, I told you it's been a while since I've been there, but the vibe of it has always been to me like, it's a big city, but it's really wrapped up in small town vibes. Like kind of all the time, you know?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I always say Portland punches a little bit above its weight.
Yeah.
Because we're a relatively small town. I mean, you know, I think we're the 26th largest city, but we've obviously, you know, are really well represented in the food and beverage scene and the music scene and the coffee scene and outdoorsy stuff and all that jazz. So, but yeah, it's also a small enough scene where everybody is kind of one degree of separation away from each other. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of easy connectivity. It's easier to start a band here. It's easier to open up a bar here, you know, for lots of reasons. But yeah, so it's everybody is somehow connected. Like, mm-hmm. you know, somebody who knows everybody. Yeah. And so the other sort of fringe benefit of that is that it's harder to be an asshole here because you'll get kicked out. You can make, you know, you can't alienate yourself.
Yeah. You know, I lived in the Bay Area for like 18 years and it was, you know, all through my formative college years and after that. And it felt like that at that time there too, because San Francisco is pretty small, like space wise, and everyone's crammed in there. And I always joked around that, like, if you dated somebody and you broke up, you had to be friends with them because there was no way to avoid them. You were going to see
100%. It's always whenever, you know, a new person moves to town, everybody who's single gets all excited because, you know, they haven't dated one of your friends.
Well, since you handle the music stuff at Hey Love right now, has that been something you've always sort of dabbled in?
Yeah.
What's your background in the music world?
So for me, it started kind of in college, and I'm old enough that I went to school at the confluence of like Napster being at its peak and like Ethernet hitting the dorms.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of nerded out on that and just was trying to find as much music as I could. It was the one thing that was really kind of keeping me motivated in school. And then I discovered the college radio station and applied for a late night DJ gig there, and did that for a while, and then became the music director of that radio station.
What was the station?
KWVA in Eugene, Oregon.
What is it again?
KWVA. KWVA in beautiful Eugene, Oregon.
Have a good friend who also DJed there. I can't remember what years, but his name is Nathan Hazard. I don't know if you know this person, but he DJed it in Eugene. Sure. Same one. I mean, that's quite a name.
It's been so long.
It's a memorable name.
I'm still
name,
connected so. With a handful of people.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what his show was called. I'm sure it was something played on the name.
You became music director there too.
Yeah. So I just, I learned that the person who was the music director was the person who got to vet all the music. And this was still when CDs were getting shipped to radio stations. And so I was the kind of the filtration system for all of that. And this was awesome. This was in the early to mid aughts. It was a super fun gig. And then I started throwing shows around campus. And then from there, I moved back to Portland and started working in venues and interning at record labels and working at record stores. And then
you did the whole thing.
Did all of it. Did sort so of dabbled thought, in every
yeah,
part of
were
it.
You wanting to be like, I'm going to work at a label and I'm going to break the next band? Were you?
Oh, 100%. Guys? Yeah, I definitely wanted to work in A&R until I learned that people in bands hate people in A&R. So I decided to go the venue route because I don't know. It just felt I wanted to come back to Portland and you know, be involved in the scene here. And it seemed like, you know, there's not, you know, there's a couple, you know, good labels out of Portland, but there wasn't any that were really speaking to me or that had openings. And I got some opportunities in some music venues around town and also helping an amazing woman named Chantel Hilton run a production company called Blackbird Presents, which was throwing a lot of amazing shows at that time. And that was kind of, yeah, my first like big kid job in the music industry. And then from there, was also bartending because, you know, working in the music business doesn't really pay a lot.
It doesn't always pay.
I needed a side gig. So I learned how to bar back and then bartend, also started working in venues. And then from there, slowly started working on opening up our own bar, which was Dig a Pony. And then, and so we would throw shows there. We used to, you know, we had DJs every night of the week and they would throw, you know, a show or two a month. That eventually led to Halo.
Yeah. Did you think that you're going to wind up having hospitality be more your life than music, having music be the side hustle?
No. I mean, I think I imagined this life where I was going to be some amazing producer or work in A&R or run some record label or something. And none of that really, you know, none of it, no signs were pointing to yes around that. the service industry stuff was both a lot more kind of fun. It was more fluid. It was like, it was more tangible. But it was also just a lot more consistent. And I actually realized that I liked the work a lot better because it was a lot more connective to people on a day-to-day basis, which I was always more drawn to.
Yeah. There's a creativity in it too. You know, and behind the scenes and definitely working with people, you know, that's something I've learned as well. So then you kind of saw yourself tipping over more into the hospitality realm, but you were bartending. So what'd you learn when you first started bartending? How was that for you?
I started high volume. I started out working in venues and in sort of more neighborhood bar type environments and you know, with very little training. So definitely leaned more into the leaning across the bar and trying to be charming than to actually any level of proficiency, you know, with making a well-balanced drink.
Yeah.
Which I picked up later down the road, but I didn't start with that. So yeah, it was more about just getting as many out as possible and trying to, you know, keep a happy, fun room.
Yeah. So when did you start going, actually, I could probably make some nice cocktails too. When did you have that revelation?
I mean, so when we opened up Dig a Pony, I was more on the event side. You know, we had really talented people who were working more on the bar aspect of the room. And, but it made sense for all of the owners to also be picking up shifts just to sort of like shoulder the weight and, you know, understand the business. So, you know, I was thrown in the deep end with some pretty talented bartenders and I soon realized that I had been given virtually zero training, you know, my previous days of just making as many vodka sodas as possible. I started making drinks that were a little bit more balanced. If I'm being honest, I never really took too hard to, the mixology, version of things. Again, I think I was always better at talking to people than actually mixing the drinks properly.
How I kind of feel too. You know, it's fun to come up with that stuff, but it's hard. It's hard. Some people just have a natural aptitude for it.
Exactly. Either. Yeah. My partner Emily at Halev is a super taster and has a really advanced palate. And my palate doesn't go much farther than tequila soda. So I try to keep it at that level.
Well, since you have been behind the bar and I'm sure learned much more than you ever expected to, and you know, in that area, have there been any like revelations, like suddenly you didn't think you were a gin guy and now you're a gin guy or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, definitely my taste has evolved over time. You know, I didn't, you know, I was the kind of person who said that they never wanted to drink, you know, mezcal or scotch because it was too smoky or, you know, you know, wasn't a vodka guy or whatever. I think I just sort of stuck to my lane. You know, when I was younger, I drank whiskey, and as I get older, I drink tequila. But, you know, I'm an equal opportunity drinker, and I'll you know, if it's well made and somebody, you know, is excited about it, I'm more than happy to try it. I don't think I've had any deep revelations about spirits. I wasn't shocked to like love Malort or something like that.
Yeah, now Malort is everywhere. I didn't think it was ever going to be allowed to leave Chicago, but I've been.
It shouldn't have ever.
I went to a bar just the other night, and it was an ingredient in a drink, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to try that. I don't know if I want to try that.
It must have been a thimble full, because it's
very overpowering. But some of those, you know, I'm like, is this going to be the next bartender's handshake? Is challenging people with some Malort, you know, see what happens there. I'm going
to
just say,
well, when you're out there, you have to drink it. It's like part of their culture.
Yeah.
It's one of those parts of culture that like people sort of like fell into being proud of. And now that they have to own, even if they don't really like it.
Don't want to. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure if you pulled anybody from Chicago aside and asked if they really enjoyed it, they should
say
straight.
No. I say yeah. No. Yeah. So I want to go back to Dig a Pony, because that was your first, you know, you actually saved up money and teamed up with people and got a bar. Yeah. But this was not just a bar. Was it a music venue first?
I think it was a bar first, and it was a music venue second. Really? I think the lesson that I had learned from being in the music business for a long time, that it's really challenging to run a venue, because you're constantly chasing a different audience every night, and you're charging a cover. And having worked in venues, I saw how difficult it could be to get the room full every night, because, you know, it's always different, and there's, you know, it's challenging having a sound check in the afternoon, because that eats into your afternoon business. Nobody wants to be there while, you know, a drummer's, you know, banging on a snare for 20 minutes. So we wanted to kind of simplify things. That's why we kind of went the DJ route, because of my work in radio and venues. We had a lot more relationships with DJs in town that we could kind of lean on. And so it was a way to have relatively cheap and plug and play entertainment on a nightly basis that still felt dynamic. This was at a time in Portland where there wasn't that many places that had DJs on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Now it's ubiquitous, which is wonderful. Yeah. But at that time there was only a handful of places that were doing it. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to sort of reverse engineer it and have DJs on a regular basis, and then have bands play, you know, when it made sense. So again, maybe a monthly or bi-monthly basis. You know, we always had something, you know, for our anniversary. We would have, you know, a couple sort of shows, you know, in early July. It was never an all the time part of our programming, again, because it can be just kind of disruptive. But if it felt good, we would throw a show, and it would always be from the floor and would feel like a sort of like, you know, a very intimate small club setting. And we would pack it out, and people would be standing on tables, and we'd let our hair down. But it never felt like something that we should be doing all of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of DJs did you have there? What was the music that you guys, did you have a focus, or were you just depending on the night, whatever?
That's a really great question. We started out, it was kind of like, I was really dogmatic about it. And we were very much focused on, you know, on the weekends, it was DJs playing all vinyl, and they're playing funk and boogie and disco and this kind of thing. A lot of soul records in that time. But then we sort of realized pretty quickly, it was a young crowd. And, you know, it was at a time where dance music was evolving pretty quickly. And then there was a lot more desire to hear kind of contemporary dance music. And so it went into a lot more, so like hip hop and edits and contemporary R&B and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where it maintained on the weekends, and it turned into a club. It was like sort of a de facto club. We never charged a cover, but it was, it was a club with, you know, sometimes a line down the street on weekend nights. But during the week, we tried to keep it tried and true, and still have DJs playing, you know, everything under the sun that felt accessible in a bar space. So, you know, lots of, you know, 70s rock stuff and soul and you know, post-punk and this kind of stuff.
I'm always amazed. Like, I think the first time I heard it at my bar, because also I'm way older than the kids that are coming there on Friday and Saturday nights, right? I stand in there and I'm just like, I'm glad you're all having fun. I was probably in college when you were born. And 100%. Then you know, the DJ will throw on Bohemian Rhapsody, and everyone will sing to it. The little kids are, what I think of as little kids, are singing to Bohemian Rhapsody. Everybody knows that song. It's one of those songs. And so that always kind of cracks me up, that it's just like, you know, they've got whatever Lil Nas X is on, but right after, but it's Queen and people are still on the ride.
I'm really glad to hear there's still some through threads. And I think it's there's probably, you know, you can credit, you know, I think Instagram and TikTok for bringing things back up. I remember a few years ago, I got really sad because I went to a Chance the Rapper show and they were playing, it was sort of the warm up DJ who is, you know, it's a full show at a, you know, a huge venue in Portland with 10,000 people. And it was a full room and it was playing lots of modern stuff. The crowd was young. They were all in their late teens, early 20s. You know, I'm at least 10 years older than everybody else there. And, you know, they were really vibing the set. And then he put on No Diggity and nobody responded.
Nobody knew it.
Oh, nobody knew it. And I was like, this is so depressing. This is such a classic. I'm so old. I shouldn't be here. You know? It's no surprise. She got tricks in the stash, stacking up the cash fast when it comes to the gas. By no means average, it's on when she's got to have it. Baby, you're a perfect 10. I wanna get in. Can I get down so I can? I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Bag it up. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Bag it up. The way you work it. I see that there's still some unifying musical theory out there that everyone can get around.
You're right, though. It's the social media, you know, with the rise of YouTube shorts and TikTok and all this, like the strangest songs come up through there. And it's kind of, you know, the monoculture is not really monoculture-y. It's like chasing trends kind of,
but 100%.
It's still interesting. Interesting. So you took that and well, and now I guess only now it's leaving your hands, Dig a Pony. And now you're all in with Hey Love.
And all so- in with Hey Love. Yeah. And so we still definitely have a pretty strong core of like strong DJ presence there. And I honestly set an intention there. You know, we did collectively, to rein it in a little bit more. I think that Dig a Pony was really successful at being that club on the weekends, but we're all 10 plus years older than we were when we started that bar. And we're, you know, I just turned 40, you know, my partners are on their late 30s and early 40s. And so we wanted to have a place that felt a little bit more like where we're at now. And so we're kind of holding the line a little bit more with DJs. So our loose cutoff with music at the bar for DJs is 1992. So it's funny, before the pandemic, it was 1986 and we're like, okay, let's give it a little bit more leeway so we can get some sort of like proto hip hop and some early, you know, that sort you know, so some R&B in there and slide it in, but mix it with the other, you know, the boogie and disco and electro and other things that we're playing. We eschew that also, like sometimes there's times where it just makes sense to like play some contemporary stuff and we allow for that, but I wanted to keep more reins on it, more of a rein on it, because we didn't want Hey Love to be a club, you know. It still has that, can have that energy on the weekend where it's full and the crowd is relatively young, but it feels like less chaos. It feels like less, you know, we don't have that as much, you know, knock on wood obviously, but like less security presence. There's less, you know, we can keep it staffed in a more even keeled way. The ramp up to the weekend is a little bit more even, as opposed to like having it be kind of really chill during the week and then, you know, blowing doors
insane on the weekend.
And we can kind of ease into the weekend a little bit, and it's nice. And sometimes we have the option of clearing out the tables where the DJ lives, you know, if it's just going that direction. If there's 5 or 10 people and they start busting out, then we can always move those tables out of the way and create a little impromptu dance party, but without having to force it.
So that's really interesting, because that's not what I envision when I think of a hotel bar restaurant, you know? So how did you guys land on this space and decide this is what we're going to make out of it?
Well, we kind of lucked into it. The Jupiter Hotel in Portland is a kind of an institution, you know, it's been there for nearly 20 years and it's in a neighborhood, kind of in the central east side of Portland that was, there wasn't a lot going on. It's pretty industrial. It's a little bit hairy. and they were kind of an early, an early adopter of that neighborhood, along with the Doug Fir, who's their tenant on the other side of the street. The Doug Fir is an amazing.
Because I've been there. Yeah.
It's an amazing music venue. And, you know, it's a really beautiful space with great acoustics and great booking. So they had existed and sort of like, you know, put a flag down for the Central East Side for many years. And we found out that they were expanding their business across the street. They were going to build a new, slightly elevated version of what they were already doing across the street from their original property. And my partner Emily's sister was the Jupiter's bookkeeper, and so, you know, we kind of got hip that they were trying to do something. We'd all been talking about doing a project together. It was a different group of partners than I had at Digapony, and but we hadn't really kind of landed on a concept or landed on a space. And all of a sudden we found out there was this opportunity, and we just spent like a long weekend really hustling to get our idea together and approach them with it. And they really liked it. And, you know, so we ended up in their lobby more or less, which is, we never imagined going into a hotel space, but you know, just because we really like them and we like their reputation and we saw what they were able to make happen with the Doug Fir, it made sense for us to try to go in there and do our thing.
It's really interesting to think of that, just like go check in, you know, at a hotel, but you're checking in sort of next to the bar, you know, where, and there's like a dance party going on. Although I say that, but I was telling you at the beginning of this call how I stayed at the R Bar here in New Orleans, which is you check in at the bar and then they walk you upstairs.
That's amazing. I mean, that's the kind of hotel I want to stay in.
It looks like you're on your way there. You might be doing it yourself soon.
You know, I mean, they've been pretty cool about it because it's like, we do get pretty loud. You know, it's like, it's not a completely separate room. There's a wall of plants that separates us from the rest of the lobby. So, you know, we've definitely had to kind of have regular check-ins to make sure, you know, we're not stepping on their toes and vice versa, but it's been a great relationship. You know, they've been sweet about it, and they've always sort of thrived on being a pretty rock and roll space. And, you know, over time we've just developed a lot of trust back and forth. And, you know, we're going to pop up in a couple of days and have, you know, set up a stage in their lobby space and have two bands and a few DJs and tattoos and a light up dance floor and all this stuff that's going to go on, like, fun. Right, you know, while they're checking people in. Exactly. So it's worked out.
Well, we should talk about the bar part of your bar, since I mean, you guys have gotten some notice in the last couple of years since you've been open.
Yeah.
You know, you've won some awards here and there, and I'm sure part of it's the vibes, but part of it have to be the drinks. And I know you said you get behind there sometimes, but what did you guys go into this thinking in terms of your drink program? You were saying you wanted to be a little bit more grown up with this space. I'm assuming that went to the drink side of things as well.
Yeah, it certainly translates to the drink and the food. I think, you know, on our end, we also didn't want to take ourselves too seriously. We wanted to have a really good time with everything. You know, we always aspire to be completely immersive. We want, you know, to look good and taste good and feel good, and the staff to be warm and welcoming and to make, you know, make the experience, you know, excellent and memorable. And those are all platitudes, right? It's like, those are sort of, it's all aspirational. But a lot of it has kind of, you know, come to fruition, you know, with the drink and food side. And it also speaks to the space, you know. I think we were coming out, when we were developing the idea for this, we're coming out of a time where everywhere, especially in Portland, you know, it was kind of the dark wood, sort of dark beer, whiskey, sort of very male driven spaces. And I think we saw a big lane to move away from that, where things were sort of lighter and brighter. You know, as far as not taking ourselves too seriously, we wanted to like make drinks that were kind of like forgotten or thrown away or thought of as like girly and make them excellent, you know, in the same way that the sort of crack cocktail movement of like the 2000s had taken, you know, an old fashioned or a Manhattan, things that were thought of as your dad's drink, and made them excellent and well-balanced and perfect. We wanted to do that with the Cosmo, for example, you know, and make, you know, and so Emily came up with, you know, a really spectacular like watermelon Cosmo that's been on our cocktail list every summer, and it like blows doors because it's delicious. And it's like, you know, we wanted to strip the pretension away from these things that were sort of thought of as throwaway drinks. You know, another big influence of ours is sort of the late 60s and 70s, and like you know, everything from like second wave feminism to the civil rights movement to like fern bars and, you know, that all that sort of frenetic energy that was happening around that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of that stuff was considered corny, you know, just a few years ago. And we're like, it's not corny. It's fun. You know, it's like people like being unpretentious about what they're eating and drinking.
Yeah.
So like, what if we took those things and really leaned in and had a good time with them and made them excellent, you know?
Yeah, did our, just do it right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm a big fan of Midori. I do not hide it.
we sell a ton of Midori. Yeah.
Because you can have Midori done well. I mean, the only
exactly.
reason, I remember like in the late 80s getting a Midori sour and it was like, just like drinking a melted lollipop or something, right? Because it was just all bad sweet and sour mix and Midori and that's like it. But you're absolutely right. Class it up. Or I shouldn't even say that. Just make it right. You know, make it balanced.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, all of these, virtually anything can be made delicious. And so I think, you know, on our end, we just wanted to strip a lot of the pretense out of what a bar was supposed to be. So there's a ton of effort that goes in on, you know, on the production side of making our food and drinks, but we want to be able to put them out. You know, quickly and beautifully and consistently every time. And so it's really prep heavy. But you know, we've got several things on draft. We didn't want to have, you know, a place that was super precious and every drink is a 10 touch cocktail. We wanted to be able to like get drinks out well. And I think we've been able to mostly, you know, make that happen.
Seems like it because people have noticed. I mean, people keep, you know, putting you guys on best of lists and all that. So I think that the vibe has worked. I mean, that era that you were talking about, that kind of late '60s, early '70s, was pretty colorful in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, politically and fashion wise. I know there's a lot of oranges and olive greens in that time, but there was also a lot of turquoise, you know?
100%.
So I totally get that. So I wanted to go back to your music a little bit because you talking about kind of bringing some of these dark age drinks and making them good again for people, making people realize that there was something to those drinks before they got gross. How about like on the music side? Because you were in radio and then you were doing these things. Were there any bands in particular that you were like especially championing or some that did you have some that got big later that were some local favorites or anything like that?
Oh, wow. God,
that had to have happened
to really dig
once.
Into my like Rolodex. Of, like,
when,
what
you
know,
I was going to say when you were a wannabe A&R guy.
Oh God. Yeah. It's embarrassing. I'm trying to think locally. I'd have to like really think about like who we were on the front end of like, it's been a minute. You know, nationally when I was doing booking, you know, it was like the early days of like, and this really dates me, but it was like the early days of like Arcade Fire and like TV on the radio.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I was at a place called Holocene. That's an amazing local venue. And it was like, you know, it was like at the height of like, you know, it was like a 200-53 in a capacity room. It was like MGMT and like Yay Sayer and Justice. It was like all that sort of like Diplo. This was like in the late aughts. So it was, you know, I was lucky enough in Portland when Portland was just getting its footing as like a kind of established music town, to see a lot of those, you know, bands grow up, you know, to see bands like, you know, like big, you know, bands that were like later huge bands for Portland, like somebody like the Decemberists or the Thermals or something like that, go from 200 or 300 capacity rooms to selling out, you know, 10,000 capacity rooms over the course of just a couple years. Portland's music scene has really ebbed and flowed because we were a town that was sort of known for a lot of like, you know, sort of like there was a punk scene, there was a bit of an indie scene and this kind of thing. And then in the 2000s, it kind of blossomed out. And it's just like, all of a sudden, there's, you know, many, like a wide, you know, diversity of genres that are being represented, you know, and you see, you know, now that there's like a really established like hip hop presence of like people like Aminé or like the Last Artful Dodger who are coming out of Portland and like, you know, becoming, you know, huge, huge artists internationally. So yeah, it's been cool to just be in the scene and see it and see people who you used to see, at the bar, you know, yeah. end up being, you know, selling out arena tours and that kind
That's
of thing.
Amazing. So for yeah. you, when you are chilling out at home, so you're sitting mm-hmm. in that beautiful backyard of yours right there.
Yeah.
Do nothing. All right. What are you sipping? What are you listening to? What's your,
I mean, again, I'm a ride or die tequila soda drinker, some white wine or something, you know, those are safe,
a safe bet for you at home.
Those are safe harbors for me. Yeah. You can stay out of trouble. I listen to a lot of older stuff. So like, you know, my ear is definitely always bent towards things that were probably made, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I listen to a lot of international music.
Oh, really?
Times I listen to a lot of jazz. I listen to a lot of, hip hop that I grew up with, you know, in the 90s yeah. and 2000s. Yeah. And I try to always be open to it. I'm definitely not adverse to contemporary music. I try mm-hmm. to not, you know, get too stay off my lawn about things.
Well, give me an artist that you would listen to while you're sipping your tequila and soda. There's gotta be somebody that comes to mind.
Right now, I'm trying to think, who am I most excited about? It's funny. I actually just mentioned the last Artful Dodger. I think like she's like my favorite contemporary hip hop artist right now. So I don't know if you're mm-hmm. you're hip to her. She was living in Portland for a long time. She actually just made the jump down to LA.
Oh, but, like, okay. The name seemed familiar, but I know I haven't
spectacular.
Heard the
Oh, there's another really great LA artist or band that I've been really interested in recently. The Gabriels. Mm-hmm. I guess it's just Gabriels. I don't think there's a the. They're wonderful. Just this perfect confluence of like gospel and soul, and it's really cinematic. So that's, I've been listening to a lot of them recently. My friend Kevin hit me to them. They've seemingly exploded. but yeah, a lot of times I'm just listening to like a lot of Bo Diddley. I think that's my go-to is usually just sort of like a lot of like Chicago blues and that kind of thing is the thing
that's nice.
Feels like the most comforting.
That's actually, I think also pretty good comfort food, you know, just that at uh-huh. home. My husband actually plays a lot of blues at home. Just
oh, really?
Wow. Oh yeah. Yeah. Blues and jazz. When he comes home, blues and jazz. When we're driving, it's like all kinds of other stuff, but at home, blues and jazz.
It's calming. It's like complicated music, but if it's the right version of it, it can also be like, you can really kind of, yeah, it's deeply settling music.
Yes. And you know, it's funny is I wouldn't associate it with tequila and soda. So I feel like you're a little rebellious in doing so.
Yeah, I really contain multitudes with my tequila and soda.
Well, I think that's probably pretty good. I don't know if you want to like let people know the Instagram links, website, all that stuff, so they can visit Hey Love if they come into town.
Yeah.
Track you down if they want to wave and say hi, where they can look up some good music in Portland, whatever.
Definitely
you want to
check out Hey Love. You know, all the regular social media channels and our website, we're real easy to find if you just type in Hey Love in Portland. We mm-hmm. actually just had our Instagram hacked. Day before yesterday, we've got a whole team of people who are helping us to try to reclaim it. It's you know, it's obviously in these modern times our best way of getting the word out.
Yeah.
Burn a candle for our Instagram.
Yeah, for real.
We'll get that back. As far as music goes, we have our own Spotify, and it's just Hey Love PDX on Spotify. And took a brief hiatus from putting out mixes, but we're putting out a new one this weekend. It's a great way to sort of hear what we're about. Cool. If you're in Portland, definitely come through and have a drink with us, and come check out New Bop. It's our jazz night, and it's really special.
And that's the Monday night one, right?
Yeah, we kind of transform into a, you know, 1950s, you know, Lower East Side jazz club. Once a month, and it feels really special. So
that's very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Aaron. I'm so glad I got to talk to you today. Don't go away.
It's really nice to meet you.
If we play every day, the streets call for a renegade, and I've been the answer, babe. Any pavement, any road, they can't roll out and innovate. Just saying. Get in a groove. This is life, world. This is life.
Big thank you to Aaron Hall for being a guest today, telling us all about Dig a Pony, as well as Hey Love, which is where you can find him these days. And you'll have to hit up the Facebook and their website, Hey Love PDX, to get info. But keep checking the Instagram, because I hope that Hey Love PDX will be back on Instagram soon once they've dealt with the snafu caused by, hackers. Making life easy for everyone. But thanks, Aaron, and can't wait to go there and have my own little dance party amongst the plants that they have all over that place and have a lovely cocktail. Oh, wait, they also have their own Spotify profile, Hey Love PDX, so look that up too. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at themermaidla.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.